we're doing is like this. So last time we did I think it was last time or maybe two times ago. We did a thing about in Parsha's Miketz, I believe, about Ruach HaKodesh. Right? We had a Ruach HaKodesh about it was earlier Parsha than Miketz, but Vayishlach. Chaya Ruach Alasu. That basically Yosef Yaakov, when he saw the color, the coat, which was bloody, he says, "Chaya ruach alasu," a wild animal ate him. And Rashi says he had ruach hakodesh, that Sofa eventually Ishes Potifar, who's like a wild animal, is going to end up provoking him. Okay, so we wondered what kind of thing is that? Had he ruach hakodesh? He didn't even think Yosef was alive, right? So, any of you here? Does that sound familiar to anyone? No, you are there. Okay, so very briefly, we said that. It means Yaakov was, he figured Yosef is probably dead. But he said, even if he's alive, he's in no condition to be able to handle the challenges that the world has. The world, after all, of Canaan, Mitzrayim, is like, it's very instinctual. Yosef was a nar, he was immature, he played with his hair, he was whatever, and he wasn't, while Yaakov was training him, trying to get him ready up to par, he felt like now, hopefully he's alive. But even if he's alive, he's likely going to be provoked by the challenges of the world, which he's not really in a condition, he hasn't yet finished his training, so to speak. And that was part of his sadness, is why he wasn't consoled, is that there was like almost the hope wasn't really there, because even being alive, he felt like he was likely to at least face very difficult challenges. And that was like a Ruach HaKodesh. He knew that Yosef was a very charismatic, good-looking type of person who was, you know, likely to fall into this type of situation. Okay, so that was what we did last time. So I noticed that was in Parshas Vayeshlach, and then I was doing Parshas Miketz, and I was going through the Rashis, and I have taken notes a little bit, and I started noticing this theme of Ruach HaKodesh. Okay, and there's, as far as I could tell, three cases in Parshas Miketz, also of Ruach HaKodesh. Okay, and they all seem to be related in this Yosef story. Okay, so I'm not sure if we'll take them all up. Maybe we will. If we want to take them all up, we're going to have to go at a little bit of a quicker pace than ordinary. But maybe we'll just go through them all, and then we'll see how many. Okay? So, the first one, I think actually maybe I gave a shir about last year. We'll see. I mean, maybe there's one that we did last year. But this is the one, 43.8. This is not in order. Okay? But this is the one. This is the main one I want to take up tonight. If we only take up one, this is the one I want to take up tonight. So it's Mem Gimel Chas. Okay. Mem Gimel Chas. So it says, so basically they had to send down, Yosef kept Shimon, right? He put Shimon in jail, and he was going to lock them up, and he wasn't going to give them food until they brought down Binyamin. And Yaakov didn't want to send down Binyamin. After all, he was his favorite. There was one son left to Rachel. And he refused to send them down, right? But eventually, the food started running out, and Yehuda made this plea that basically, let him go. If not, then I'll be sinful to you all my days, right? So let him go. I'm taking personal responsibility to, right? So Pasuk Chas, 40 Gimel Chas, Vayomer Yehuda al Yisrael Aviv, Shilcha Nar Iti, send the boy with me, V'nekuma V'nelecha, let us go, V'nichya, and we'll live, Alo Nomos, we're not going to die. Gam anachnu, gam ata, gam tapenu. Okay, us and you and our kids, right? So plain pshat means we'll live, means this is going to support us. We need the food. This is going to help us live. We'll go. We'll come back. We'll be fine. Right? Everything's going to be fine. And that's what Rashi says. Rashi says, additional pshat, v'nichya, nitz nitzah bo ruach hakodesh. The same lashon. You get a spark of ruach hakodesh. Al yedei halicha zu, through, via this halicha, this going, techi ruchacha. Your spirit will live, right? Your spirit will live. No, Yehuda saying that to Yaakov. Your spirit will come back. Shenemar v'techi ruach Yaakovim. And sure enough, that's what happened. The spirit of Yaakov came back when he found out that it was Yosef. It says techi ruach Yaakovim, right? He was his spirit came back. His ruach hakodesh came back. His nevuah, because it says he was all depressed and now he was happy, right? So it's saying is v'nichya v'lo namos, will live and we won't die. Saying is an allusion to this Ruach HaKodesh, that there's going to be Chias, Yaakov is going to come back to life. Or his spirit is going to come back. Now again, on the different Peshat, it's hard to understand this. This is not a very happy trip to Mitzrayim. After all, Yaakov saying, Kasher Shacholti Shacholti, like this is so hard, I'm bereaved, I'm giving up on my last son. Yehuda is saying, if I don't do it, it's guaranteeing success, which is hard to know he could really guarantee. This is, after all, they're going, Yosef has them in jail, they found the money in the sacks. This is like not a Peshat slam dunk. This is not something, wow, now we're happy, now everything's going to work out. It doesn't sound like things are working out. This is a tough decision. Who knows what's going to happen? Right? Now, it's true, you're just saying the confidence. Even if there's confidence, the confidence should be that we're going to get the food and be able to come back. But now Yaakov's spirits are going to come back. How are his spirits going to come back? He's crying about Yosef. He knew that they were going to get Yosef somehow. That's hard to believe. He knew he was going to get Yosef. Right? Okay, is everyone with me? Okay, so the one I show you the other ones also, okay? But that's, is there any other question on this before we move to the other cases? Okay, so then the next one is a little bit soon, actually. The same parak, Pasuk Yadal.
Tiny question, yeah. Is that being said because it says Vinitya Vilonamas, like why is it repetitive? Or
oh,
is like
I don't know. That's a good question, I'm not sure. Maybe. Could you just say V'lo Namas? Yeah, maybe. V'lo Namas. We're not going to die. We'll get the food. But V'nichya, maybe it's an additional thing. Not only are we going to not die, but we're going to get some super-duper chias. Namely, yeah, maybe. Could be right. Let's see. Yeah, that's what they want to say here. Mizrahi Sasecham. Judah could have said, V'lo Namas. We'll not die. Apparently, the purpose of we will live. We'll lose survival of Yaakov's spirit. Okay, good. That's the Mizrahi and Sasecham. Good. Okay. So then, if you look at Pasuk Yudalad, so then, sure enough, after, then basically Yaakov went along with it. He says, okay, here's the plan. I hear you. I'm going to do it. Here's the plan. Let's make send down a gift and all that, and right? And then after he says his plan, he says, Pasuk Yudalad, V'kel shaka yitain lachem racham lefnei ha'esh, and Hashem should give you guys mercy before the man, namely Yosef. And he'll send out with you your other brother, that means Shimon, Benyamin, and Benyamin. And for me, that I'm bereaved, I'm so unbereaved, like I'm willing to accept my fate that, you know, maybe it won't work out here. Okay? So the Rashi is dealing with the fact, what does it mean, this Achichem Acher v'Es Benyamin, right? So, Plaim Shah Rashi says, "As Achichem, Zeh Shimon." Alright? As Shimon. Right? But Rashi says, Acher. Rashi says, Ruach HaKodesh Nizrukaba. Ruach HaKodesh was thrown at him. Different Lashon, a little bit. The other one was like, Nitznitzaba, a spark. There's like Nizruk HaKodesh thrown into him. The Rabos Yosef. It includes Yosef. Okay? So it means, As Achichem, Shilach Achem, Hashem, should give you mercy. And should send with you your other brother, the other brother. So it's like an allusion to the other brother, namely Yosef. Not the explicitly talking about brother, but the hidden brother, right? And Binyamin, right? Which again, doesn't seem like Yaakov thinks that Yosef's alive at this point, right? So it's funny to say, he's having Ruach Kodesh that'll get the other brother, we'll get Yosef, right? Right? Okay, good. Similar, right? And then lastly, if we go back, this is in Perek Membez Yud Aleph. Membez Yud Aleph. Okay. So this is basically when they first came to Yosef, right, to get the food. And Yosef accused them of being spies. Okay, Membez Yud Aleph. So they said, no, we're not spies. Yod, Pasuk Yod, Vayemoy Lav Lo Adoni. It's not true, my master. Avdecha Balish Baruch, we came to buy food. Kulanu Bnei Chech Anachnu. We're all the sons of one man. Kenem Anachnu, we're truthful. Lo Yod Arangam, we're not spies. Right? So what does it mean? Kulanu Bnei Chech Anachnu. We're all the sons, right? So Rashi says, Nitzanus of Ruach Kodesh. They had Ruach Kodesh, Vekalo Imahem. And we included him amongst themselves. Sheafu Ben Aviam. He was also the son of their father. Right? Kulanu b'nei Yeshachat. All of us, including you. Right? So it's Ruach Kodesh, that even Yosef was part of their one son, right? Which is, again, same kind of problem, right? Same kind of problem. Right. Yes.
But at least in this case, like, it could have been that they weren't certain what happened to Yosef, the brothers.
They weren't certain.
Right.
Yes.
They couldn't be certain that he died over the years.
Yeah, that's true. But still, they're talking to him and says, we're all the son of one brother. I mean, they don't think he's Yosef. No. Right? I mean, that's certainly not what they're thinking, right? I mean, you see how shocked they were when he finally revealed himself to them, right?
Right.
Right. Right. Oh, let's see. Was there one more Rashi here? Give me a second here. Just think here. Let me just see what... Yeah. Oops. So, okay. Oh yeah, one second. Maybe there's one more here. No. Okay, it's another one. Membe is Aleph. Okay? Membe is Aleph. So it says there was this hunger in Mitzrayim, and it says, Ve'yar Yaakov ki yashever Mitzrayim. So Yaakov saw that there was this famine in Mitzrayim. Ve'yomer Yaakov Labanov, and Yaakov said to his kids, Lama Tisro, why are you making yourselves obvious that you have food? That's the way Rashi learns it. Okay, Membe is Aleph. Right? Why are you making obvious that you guys have food? Right? So what does it mean by Ya Yaakov ki yashever Mitzrayim? Yaakov saw that there's hope. There's food in Mitzrayim. So he says, Mechon Ra, where did he see? Valalo Ra, Lashama, he heard, he didn't see. How do you see? He didn't see Mitzrayim, he heard. Hineshnemer, he shemati, and that's what he said in the next pasuk. I heard that there's food in Mitzrayim. So he says, Umahavayar, Ra'as Bibiskapis Ispaklaria Shel Kodesh. He saw from the lens of Kodesh, some sort of a Nivua type of thing. Shadain Yeshel Shev Mitzrayim. Israel save every Mitzrayim. There's still hope in Mitzrayim. Okay, so Shever can mean food, but it can also mean like hope. Okay, Kovezro, Sivro, Alashem Aluka, Vizin Aluka. So Sivro means like hope. But Lohoitz and Nevoah Mamish, Odia Bafir, say Yosef. It wasn't a Nevoah, a real Nevoah, that told him it was Yosef, but he had like some sort of a vision that there was hope in Mitzrayim. Right? He was hoping in Mitzrayim. And that's why he was saying, let's go down, let's go there. Right? So you get this trend here, right? Trend in here with these Ruach HaKodeshes, right?
They're all four different
Lishonos
for saying it also.
I know. It's true. Well, the other one from last week was the same Nitznas about. Yeah. I know. And there was another one I saw this morning, actually. And that's in Vayigash. But I'll leave it. That one's Paro having a... Whatever. Let's leave that one. I think that one might be different. Okay. So this is strange, right? I mean, again, I don't know for sure that this is unique, but I do take notes on Rashi's when I have difficulties with them, and I kind of write it down. And I searched my notes for Ruach HaKodesh, and they all ended up in these parshios. So I don't know. Maybe I missed some other ones, and like it could be that, especially there's different languages it says it. So like now I'll be more aware of it. So maybe it comes out more often than this, but there's a high, you know. I certainly don't think it's this common, you know.
I feel like I have memories of learning all of them.
Right. You can't like remember other ones. I know. It's sometimes the kind of things that you might just miss. That you know, it's like hard to know. I mean, I'll pay attention this year. You could also, or you know, we'll see. But yeah, so obviously, in my opinion, actually, is you can't think about all the four of these things at the same time. It's like too much. It's too hard, right? What are you going to think about all of them? That's too, in my opinion, too amorphous for your mind to be able to grab hold of. I think you have to kind of I would think you want to take one or two, you know, one at a time and then see if you could unify, yeah.
Would it not be a valid approach to see if there's something common to all of them that would make sense? That, like, this would be, like, a theme of some kind of HaKodesh going through the story?
Yeah, so...
Just method-wise.
So, yeah, so this is my personal opinion about things like this, okay? Which is that you have... There are often these types of things come up, and in the Gemara also. Okay, a lot of sugyos, a lot of things, you know, which involve the same halachic principle. Okay, and sometimes you look for the grand unification. And the reason why I think it's a bad idea, again, maybe some people like it, but I'll give you my opinion on it's bad, which is that you are thinking superficially about four different areas, and you're trying to unify them. But your thoughts are merely superficial. So it's like you're unifying, trying to find a unified idea, but you don't have any deep knowledge about anything in particular. So it's like you're scratching the surface of four different things and trying to unify them. You know? It'd be like trying to unify relativity and quantum without understanding well what relativity is or what quantum is. Just taking a superficial glance or a look at it. It's like you don't know what you're dealing with. So oftentimes in each individual thing, we could think into it, analyze it, think back, forth, different possibilities, and then we could get an idea about it in like a deeper way. But that's easier to think about because you're thinking about like one thing and you can have more pointed, focused questions. As opposed to like your mind is like jumping to four different things and you don't really understand any one of them very well. And you can't focus on all of them in a deep way at the same time. So your mind just keeps jumping to superficial components of each one. But then I just feel like you end up not getting deep enough because it's like a cursory glance of the four things. Yeah.
But I mean, I guess part of it for me is that I just don't really know what Ruach HaKodesh is. Like, mm-hmm. I would think that it might be possible looking at the four to see if there's something in common to all of them that would.
Yes.
Is that not the question? Like, what this Ruach HaKodesh is? Or
yes, it is the question. But like, first of all, it's not clear that they're all the same.
Okay.
It's one thing. It's not clear they're all the same altogether. And even if they are, it's like, how are you going to go about figuring out what it is? So you're just going to try to find one thing which sounds similar to all of them. But you don't have any depth, any deep understanding of any one of these things. So it just, you're kind of, you know, I think it's often more, you know, like kind of free associating to what you think Ruach HaKodesh is and seeing if you kind of work it into, you know, I don't know exactly that, but it's just, yeah, I don't know, just in my experience, getting ideas comes from the smallest problems possible and working up. Not that there's no value to unifying it after, but it just, your ability to unify will be that much greater when you have a deeper handle on the particulars that you're dealing with. And look, if you can't get anywhere with the particulars, I'm not saying there's no value to having in your mind's eye these other things, and maybe helping them inform your analysis of one of them, but at the same time, to try to study one of them deeply, you know?
They all have the common thread that they are not aware that what they're saying is Ruach HaKodesh.
Yes.
You know, most of the time it doesn't happen to someone.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Only the reader now is aware. It's not like anyone else.
Yes, yes. And that's why, you know, that's part of the question. That's part of the problem. But I don't know if that means that's what Ruach HaKodesh is always. Ruach HaKodesh always means when you're not aware of things, Ruach HaKodesh is as it is. So now, why don't you give a grand unified theory about Ruach HaKodesh? Well, these aren't the only four times Ruach HaKodesh. So now these are just the four that happen to be in Parshas Miketz. Okay. But there's, you don't pick every Ruach HaKodesh. There's 100 Ruach HaKodesh. So now you're going to unify all those. So, like, I don't know if we're in position to get a unified theory about all Ruach HaKodeshes, not just these. Well, now we don't understand these, you know? So it's kind of somewhat arbitrary to just pick these four and to make a real theory about all Ruach HaKodesh from these four things. But you're studying one thing, you can think, you know, like, try to gain some insight.
I 100% hear that for something like this. It's only four examples out of many, but I mean, I wouldn't call that a unified theory. If you're trying to make a definition of something that has a lot, I'm just asking, just method-wise. I mean, I can see why it doesn't work here.
Right.
I think that sometimes if you have a lot of examples of something, by seeing what's consistent in all the examples and what's not, that you could pull out.
Well, it depends.
I don't think you can do it with this, so it's...
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the thing. Like, if you have four things that you understand well, four things in your experience that you have a good grasp on, and you're just trying to unify them, that's one thing. I'm saying if you have four things which
unified.
Are...
I would call it unifying.
You could be unifying four things. I mean, you know, you could have a good grasp on four different subjects and you could try to find some unification of them. But I'm saying is if you don't have a grasp on the subjects and you just kind of have sketchy sense about the particular, about the areas in general, then you're trying to unify something, but you don't have... The unification is a higher level knowledge. That's my point. Unification is like level 2 type of knowledge. And you're not... If you don't have basic knowledge of the thing, then you're not able... What are you unifying? You're unifying some superficial idea of it. Like, it sounds like Ruach HaKodesh is that you hear something which you don't know about. Well, that's... Maybe. I mean, that's kind of in these cases, but is that the essence of what's going on here? We don't even know what the essence of what's going on here. We don't even know the point. So these things themselves are very difficult to understand. So what we're trying to unify them, we don't even understand any of them. They're all, each one of them is equally difficult. So it's like we don't have, they're just four problems, none of which seemingly makes any sense, and now we're just going to try to unify them. We don't understand them. How do we... No, look, maybe there's a way to do it. I'm not saying, you know...
I don't think there's any way to do it here. I was making it a friend, but it's not necessarily...
Okay, fine. Pursuing. Yeah.
What does it mean, she thinks that there is Ruach HaKodesh? Because it could just be statements that they made that happen to, fit
the truth. Yeah, it could be, but then what's the point? I mean, I know, you could say, look, it just... Rashi is pointing out that, look at that. They said this thing, which means something totally different, but if you twist their words in a different type of a way, and you know the future, it turns out they said words that happen to be cleverly aligned with what actually happened. Okay, whoop-de-doo. Like, what does that do for us? What does that teach us? Okay, you could do that with a lot of people's words. You twist them and say, oh, look at that. It turns out you said something which ended up coming true. I mean, maybe that's something that, mystical-minded people would like to grab hold of. You just take anything out of context and you show, But what's the value of that? Where's the chachma in that? Where's the lesson in that? Right? So I would think, again, the plainest way is somehow there's some insight which there is implicit in their words. Like by the Yosef case, there's an insight that Yaakov had into the situation at hand, and he's expressing something which is, he's sensing some idea which is more than deeper beneath the surface, which isn't apparent. And that's what he's expressing, Rosh Potifar. He's picking up on some deep subtlety in the situation, which wouldn't necessarily be apparent to your obvious observer. Did we do this one last year about, or 2 years ago, or any year? Does that sound familiar to anyone about the one where he said that I'm your brother? Kulanu b'yashecha nachnu? No? Okay, maybe it didn't. Okay, it's hard for me to remember these things, You guys would remember, no?
60%.
60% memory?
It's like
you're better than
general. I have a bad memory, but I don't remember why.
Does this come under the 60% or the
40? I don't remember hearing it.
No, the 60, the fact that you're 60. Is that part
That's
of your
like
60? That's
60% of 60.
I'm just saying maybe it's really...
I actually usually do remember if I heard an idea about something, I'll necessarily remember the idea.
So maybe I didn't. Yeah, okay, so why don't we take up... I guess let's just start with one. So the first one is about that the one I mentioned, right? About Yehuda saying "V'nechev el onamos," right? So where was that one? Let's see. Was it?
You shouldn't start with the first one. You don't think they
I don't want to. I'm not sure. I don't think that's a rule, but I don't want to do that either. 43:8. Yeah, 43:8. Mem Gimel Chas. Yep. Okay, is everyone on the phone? How are we doing there?
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Okay, good.
Actually, on your point over here, there's a lot of double language in this, not just...
We'll live and we won't die. Means that eventually we'll have... Chias, through this coming, going, Yaakov will have his spirit back. Right?
Could it be that he had, some sense of Yaakov's being stuck on Yosef and Binyamin, and then maybe he had like some sense that if he could allow Binyamin to go, that that would free up something in him that would allow him to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But ultimately, the reason why Yaakov had his tchi was because of Yosef. Because it turned out it was Yosef, right?
Right, that was because he was able to do that, because he got over
Binyamin. Mm-hmm. He found Yosef, he was that?
I'm saying, because he was able to move on past Binyamin, he was like, it was all, like he was able to be reunited with Yosef, according to that.
In what sense? He's able to...
Like Hashgacha
wise. Oh, okay, Hashgacha wise. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, the state that they were in, it was like really stuck. I mean, it doesn't really go with what Rashi was saying anyway. But
stuck?
He was just, yeah, stuck on...
Oh, on Yosef.
On Yosef.
Right. Yeah, right. Okay, good. Okay, someone else? That's a good thought. Okay, so let me elaborate on that, okay? So along that direction, which is that, I mean, it's based upon some shiur and Rebbe's given over the years, is that basically this whole thing of Yisrael Yosef was a chet on the part of Yaakov, and on the part of the Shvatim, and on the part of Yosef. But let's leave Yosef out of this for now. That basically, Yaakov started this thing by showing favoritism. Because I'll say a person should never show favoritism to any of their children, because you see what happened with Yaakov. He still showed favoritism with the colored coat towards Yosef, and it didn't work out well. He overestimated their ability to handle it, but he aroused their jealousy, and it turned out they ended up selling him, right? So that was an error. That he was too attached to Yosef, or not that he was personally, emotionally too attached, but he showed it. And that was an error, right? It was a misjudgment of the people, and it was a bad idea, right? So that was a chet, and he had to overcome that. And similarly, I mean, more obviously, the brothers had a chet, that their sibling rivalry against Yosef, the favorite of Yaakov, caused them to get blinded and misjudge Yosef's personality. And in order to, these errors led to the temporary disruption of Klal Yisrael from really functioning at its highest level. And it was necessary for them to all do tshuva to be able to reemerge as an Am, right? And Yosef was obviously part of it, orchestrating it based on the dreams and all that, right? But basically, it could be that Yehuda sensed that this moment was critical in their tshuva process. Critical on the part of Yaakov and critical on the Shvatim. Critical on the part of Yaakov, that the new favorite became Binyamin. And he resisted letting go of Binyamin because he was, after all, the only son now left to Rachel, replacement for Yosef. And he was not letting him go. But he finally said, listen, I realize for Klal Yisrael this is necessary. Look, I'm bereaved. What am I going to do? I'm accepting the reality of the situation. I'm going to let him go. And that was a big step. He was previously unable to do that, and he was willing to. And so, in fact, that's what Rashi says, just like I was lost of Yosef, I'm lost of Binyamin. In a certain sense, he accepted his state. And that was big. And then, also, the brothers, Yehuda, took a stand, and after all, Binyamin arguably aroused in the brothers the same types of emotions as Yosef did. Right? In fact, there's a Ramban who says he didn't want to send Binyamin back alone with them, because he was worried that maybe they're going to attack him. So that's why he put the cup in there to make sure that they would stand up and try to stand up for Binyamin in order to make
Yosef
a test.
Yosef
was concerned, even after they came there, maybe they're going to kill Binyamin on the way home now that they got Binyamin back and Shimon. So he put the cup there to not let them get far away and to test whether they would stand up for Binyamin. But my point is that Binyamin clearly was the replacement. The emotions which they previously had towards Yosef could likely be directed towards Binyamin. Yaakov's almost stubbornly holding on to Binyamin, not letting him go. And the brothers, Yehuda's play is, I will personally give up everything, guaranteeing that I will do everything in my power to protect Binyamin. right? And I recognize the how attached you are, and I'm going to give everything for that. So that was the tshuva. Instead of throwing Binyamin under the bus like he did with Yosef, on the contrary, he's stepping up to the plate and saying, listen, I'm going to back it up, I'm going to guarantee it. So that was a major, and Yehuda was the leader of the brothers. So here in this very incident, the letting him go, right now, this moment, saying go, Yaakov saying go, Yehuda demanding it, and Yehuda saying, oh, Yaakov saying okay, was a critical point in the growth of both Yaakov and of the Shvatim, overcoming their flaw. As painful as it is, and as desperate as the situation seems, it's a major step in their personal growth. And they had an intuition that painful decisions, which are tshuva decisions, as painful as they are better for you in the long run, in terms of sarva onesh. Ultimately, I don't think based on laws of nature, it's a positive outlook here, but in terms of just plain naturally, it's bleak. What are we going? We're going into, you know, they didn't know anything, but they know is that, look, it's hard to judge whether something is going to turn out good or bad. But one thing you could know is that the better a person you are, the more likely you are that the Hashgacha is going to relate to you positively. Certainly when you're builders of Klal Yisrael. And when you realize this is like a breakthrough moment of Yaakov and of the Yehuda and the brothers really overcoming these major flaws, then Yehuda says, V'nichya v'lo namas. This should be a source of chias. And that's, you don't know how. Obviously, you don't know how. You don't know what exactly is going to turn out. But they knew, likely, it's a good chance Yosef is alive. They don't know exactly what. That's what it's saying. It's like a, it's like a, what is this lesson? It's like a spark of Ruach Kodesh, right? It's like, he has a sense that this will help us out. Now we're in a tough state. Yaakov is depressed. He can't function properly. This is like, things aren't working out great. But this decision, as hard as with this, our state, is likely to help us, to lead in a path towards the building back of Klal Yisrael, you know? And it could be that Yaakov also, in his tefillah, he says, V'kel sheka yitein racham, whatever it's yitein lachem racham, v'shilach lachem es achichem acher v'as ben yamin. Could be he also realized, acher is a reference to Yosef, that is a tefillah, that also maybe this Yosef situation will get resolved, or he doesn't know. He, after all, also doesn't know if Yosef's really dead. So, who knows? But he realizes, because this is a moment where he's involved in tshuva, and he's overcoming, and he's letting go, he's mispalel that this will be a zechus to help bring about, hopefully, to bring about, if Yosef is alive, maybe this will be a proper, a zechar to him, will be that he will end up getting back Yosef.
Right? So what's the idea of Ruach HaKodesh and not tefillah, or not?
What I'm saying is that in both of them, they both sensed the fact that this is it's possible, you don't know for sure, and that's why I think it's like an intuition, that this could be a watershed moment in terms of our relationship with the Hashgacha, and could be a very positive opportunity. Yehuda saying it as a matter of fact, and Yaakov incorporating into his tefillah that it will... That's a chus, will help them, resolve this, Yosef's situation. They don't know for sure, and they're not saying it explicitly, because you can't say it explicitly. It's just an intuition, and they don't really know, and for all they know, plain shot is Yosef's not alive. Or who knows? I mean, certainly Yaakov thinks that, and Yehuda thinks, who knows where he is, right? But at the same time, it just, decisions which are painful, but when you know that they're good in terms of your tshuva, that you could have an intuition that is the leading you in the proper path. And that's like in the moment of the painful decision, they were able to have that intuition. And that's what I'm saying is like the Ruach HaKodesh it was like a picking up on like almost like a hashkacha, or that allowed them to have that insight at this moment, to pick up on that. And they were, in a sense, predictive of what actually happened. But what actually happened was true. They didn't know that he was alive, but it's true that until they overcame these averos, it wasn't going to happen, and they weren't going to get back Yosef. And now that they did overcome them, they were able to get back Yosef. So in a sense, it was true. Now, they didn't know, because they didn't know Yosef was alive, and they didn't know whatever. But even if Yosef weren't alive, it would be helpful to them. What would it have done? I don't know. Maybe it would have been Hashgach. Hashem would have helped Yaakov overcome his mourning for Yosef. Maybe he would have found the body. Maybe there would have been something. Maybe that would have helped him have chias. Maybe somehow, you know, we don't know. But it's like they were, in fact, it turns out it was true. This was the cause. You know, they didn't understand in particular. But Yeruach HaKodesh could allow a person to have an intuition which picks up on something, you know, without knowing exactly what it is. So I don't know, maybe it's now that's a question, how does that work? Is it just divinely assisted type of knowledge? And the Rambam says something like that oftentimes the Ruach Kodesh could be where a person has help from a Kodesh Baruch Hu in gaining some insight or in doing some action, or, you know, it's not like a nevuah, but it's some sort of a hashgacha to help a person in that. So I'm not going into how exactly the mechanism worked. What I'm saying is they were able to pick up on that subtlety and they were correct about it. That was part of the, you know.
So yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean that they had any sense of this quote-unquote Ruach HaKodesh meaning, but rather that they had some sense that they were moving in a way that was helping them maybe be more in line with the Hashkafa that could help them. And they knew that, and it's being phrased as Ruach HaKodesh that this was happening.
Yes, and in a sense they were correct. They ended up being correct.
Happening.
Yeah, they knew something was happening, or they intuited. They didn't know for sure, but they had an intuition that something was happening, and that's right. Yeah.
Right. This isn't just like a generic outcome. This is like a specific way of doing tshuva.
Yes. Right. Exactly. Right. That's what I'm saying. It's not just. There's something concrete, which is, and I think that's part of the point. Is like a chacham doesn't just view the world the same way everyone does. You know, when Yosef is taken and Yaakov says Chayei Rachelasu, he's thinking about Potiphar, that type of thing. When here Yehuda is saying, "Let us send us, give us the food." While the plain shot of what's going on is the food and saving us, they're thinking about more than meets the eye and the hashkacha and this tarva onesh and the tshuva. And Yaakov's thinking he's davening for Binyamin. And for Shimon, in the back of his mind, he's thinking about this. And so it's like they're functioning on a different plane, and like even though they didn't know exactly what was going on with Yosef, there was this mystery about going with Yosef, and they were thinking, probing. It's like a different level of interaction with the events than ordinary people would be, you know? Yeah. Okay, so maybe we'll go to another one. Does anyone have a question there on the phone?
One time I heard, I don't know if you mentioned this, but Yaakov said he used the name Shakai.
Yes.
Which meant like everything, the suffering, all the...
Yeah.
I guess that thing he's going to was going to come to an end.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. He was
like,
saying,
"We should like I've already gone through a lot of bad things." And
yes.
Things anyway.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's a Rashi on that pasuk. Yeah, that's related. Yeah. Okay. So now the other one. So that's that one. Then we have. Why don't we look at the. We're all Kulanu B'nei Shechad Nachnu. Okay, so where was that one? 42:11. I have in my notes in English, it's just for this. 42:11. Membe is Yud Aleph. Okay, Kulanu B'nei Shechad Nachnu. We're all the sons of one person, right? So it says there's a spark of Ruach HaKodesh that even Yosef was part of them. That's strange, right? Here it is, they're negotiating with Tzafnas Paneach or whatever, right? Obviously, they don't think he's Yosef, right? He's putting them through this whole ring of this terrible, all this stuff. You're spies, accusing them of spies. He says, "We're not spies, we're all brothers. You also, us, you," right? I mean, it's like a crazy thing. That can't be what they think, right? So what kind of, turns out it was true, but did they think, hey, maybe this is Yosef? I mean, it certainly seems when he revealed himself, they didn't even believe him. They were shocked, they were, right? It doesn't seem like that's part of the story. That they thought maybe he's Yosef, their brother, right? Right. It's hard to believe that was even that was even close to their mind's eye. That he's Yosef, right?
I'm not sure if this is enough of an answer to be like what Rashi's like saying, but you can say maybe that they like could tell they had something in common with him.
Okay, good.
They're like similar kind of people.
Something in common with him.
They're all not native Egyptians.
Yeah. Okay, good.
This is also like a weak answer. Maybe just like sometimes when you speak in a certain way, it could be conjures up like a certain idea or a certain memory or a certain thought. Right. So just when they started to say like we're all you know, children of one father, it has to make them think like there was one more, like just brings to mind the fact that there was like someone else who's
But it's not referencing him, you mean?
Not him particularly,
but
there's another brother that's...
I know, but the thing is, like, Ruach HaKodesh, that he's them.
That's what I'm saying, not
great.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay, so maybe to go to elaborate on what Tamar is saying, okay? Which is that they sensed that he's not an ordinary guy. He's not just a Stam Mitzri. After all, he's the brains. In Paro's sense, he's not just a Mitzri, right? He's the brains behind this whole operation. How exactly did he pull that off? This is like an abnormal type of guy. The Mitzrim aren't his greatest Chachamim. And here it is, this guy who's ruling the whole country and set up this whole system of giving out all the food. And they're interacting with him and they realize this guy is special. He's almost like one of us. He's a chacham in a different type of a way than you'd expect of your average Mitzri, right? They could pick up on that just from even the small interaction. This is at the beginning of the story, but they had a sense that this guy is not ordinary. Now, not that obviously they don't think he's their brother, but when they're talking to him, so pshat of the pasuk is they're trying to cause him to identify with them and to identify with him and trying to appeal to his rachamim. So when they say to him, they say, "No, we're all brothers." Now they're using a language which obviously they can't say to him, "You're our brother," but they said it in a way which is lends itself to including him. And the attempt is to arouse his sense of mercy and identification with them. So they sense that he's one of them. He probably senses that also. They're not ordinary people. So they're talking in a way which is an attempt to arouse his mercy to say, "We're all brothers." And in fact, they were right. They didn't interact with him that much at this point. But the Ruach HaKodesh was, they picked up on a subtlety that he was like one of them. He had a similar type of way of looking at the world and of thinking about things and a chachma. And they used that in their negotiation to try to appeal to him. Right? And that was the type. They wouldn't just stop saying it. They consciously, their choice of words was one which was attempting to arouse his identification, right? And that was ultimately, arguably that was part of their play in general, was to read him and to figure out how to present themselves to him in a way. That was like the Rebbe or Manhattan Pshat, he kept mentioning as your father. Oh no, they saw that he kept asking about the father. As your father, as your father, as your father. So then when Yehuda's play, ultimately, in the opinion of Igash, he mentioned that her father's going to die and whatever. So they were reading him. They were trying to pick up on subtleties. How do we talk to him in a way which is going to get him to believe us, to have compassion upon us, So this is one of the things that they early on picked up upon, that was a thing. He must feel lonely in Mitzrayim. After all, he's not like one of them. We're like him. We could talk to him. That will resonate with him. And it because in truth that was the case. Now, they didn't know that he was Yosef, obviously, but they picked up on the fact that he could have been. He's almost like one of us, That's crazy. So again, that's like a Ruach HaKodesh. It means the ability to sense that, to pick up on that, and to then present themselves in that type of a way under the most intense pressure. After all, they were just accused of being spies. They came, they thought they were just going to get food and walk away, and he says, "You guys are spies," and they had the ability, the insight, to not just react, but to talk to them in that way, picking up on that subtlety and finding the right way to express themselves. That was an insight which they had, and that was, that's what's being expressed. Okay, and then the last one in this parasha, which maybe was the first one in this parasha, Yaakov's vision, 42:1. So Yaakov said, Yaakov saw that there was a food in Mitzrayim, Shever, right? Food. But it says the drasha is that he saw in his Asplaklaria Shel Kodesh, in his vision somehow, that that there was hope in Mitzrayim. Right? It wasn't a Nevuah Mamish to tell him that it was Yosef, but it was a sort of type of, you know. So, right? So what kind of, how does that, there's still hope in Mitzrayim? Why? He's just going there to get food, right?
What does that mean, that they don't be conspicuous that you have food? What does that even mean?
I don't know. That's a different food discussion. Yeah, it seems like Pshat is. I mean, there's different ways to learn this. Rashi and Ramban. It seems like they had food, but they were worried that, I don't know why they had food. Maybe it was Ashkacha they had food, but other people were running out of food, and if they would look like they had food, then people, if they're just sitting there comfortably, then people would bust into their houses and take their food or whatever.
So why did he say, I heard that there's food in Mitzrayim, go down? Wouldn't he have just said, go down to Mitzrayim and get food?
Well, he has to know that there is food in Mitzrayim first in order to say, you know, here there's food in Mitzrayim, and that's where people, in theory, it's available. So go, don't show off. Don't say, oh, who cares, there's food in Mitzrayim? We got food. Don't present yourselves in a way that, you know. But I want to avoid that.
Okay,
I know. I understand. Yeah. One way to learn is, the other way Ramban learns, one of the ways, I think in Tupshat, one is like, don't get hungry. I'm about to show, don't be, you're going to be, start getting famished, and you're going to be poor. And that's a plain, that's the easiest way to read, you know?
Okay.
If you want, you know, without any difficulties. Why are we, you know? But, I mean, I guess if you want to stick with Rashi.
Ever being translated as hope.
Yes. Sever Shalom. Hope. Yeah, they quote there 146:5. And in the first Halakha, you'll see what he says. Sivra al Hashem Elokav. His hope is on Hashem. All right, so any thoughts? We're short on time here. But so I was thinking like this, is that basically maybe Yaakov has a sense. It's strange. After all, there's a famine. And somehow Mitzrayim has this massive storehouse of food. Right? It's like, how did that happen exactly? Right? It is only possible because of Yosef, ultimately, right? How would, yeah, Nevuah, right? They had Nevuah, the dreams, the whatever, and they have the food and they stored it up, and that's like abnormal. Yaakov's sensing something's going on there. I don't understand exactly what, but it's not like Mitzrayim is this brilliant somehow country that's got, and they're strong, but there's a famine. What's going on here? And he's just sensing that there, maybe there's Hashgacha involved somehow. I don't understand exactly what, but this doesn't seem like an all too normal type of turn of events. And therefore, whereas maybe everyone else was resisting going to Mitzrayim, the other, no one thought of it. He's like, let's get going. Let's go to Mitzrayim. He's like, he feels like he wants to move towards the Hashgacha. He's sensing that there's something going on here beyond just the ordinary chain of events. It wasn't a void, you know what? But he had this sense that that's the place to be directing your energies, because there's an abnormal thing going on here, and it seems like it's bringing us to Mitzrayim. You know, and therefore, let's go. So it could be it's explaining why Yaakov is the one who has this idea, right? It's true, he's the leader, he's the father, but you think maybe he'd resist. But he's has this type of an intuition or a nevuah or whatever, that this is hashkacha-like and he's moving in that direction, you know? So putting all these things together, okay, you just basically have this situation where you have people who are in the dark about what's really going on. There's Yosef in the background here, this mysterious thing which they all don't know about. But yeah, and they're under immense pressure, painful situations, and they're, even though they don't know about Yosef, they have this intuitive feel for the right direction, or for what's the way to go, and that something's going on, and that it's like describing, on the one hand, they're acting in the dark, that they have no clue really what's going on, and there's this story happening without their knowledge, unless Yosef's orchestrating it all, but and at the same time, they are not quite in the dark. But they like have this intuitive sense about how to operate and what's going on. And I think that's maybe part of the message, is that that's often the way the world is. Sometimes we have knowledge about decisions, but a lot of decisions in life, we don't really know what's going on and we don't really know how to decide. But a chacham knows how to decide in absence of real knowledge, how to intuit the proper direction and what's going on. And even if you can't have certain knowledge, usually in life you can't have certain knowledge, but you have to make decisions. And it's like there is part of the ability of good decision-making is to figure out how to read your intuition, how to pick up on things, and how to, you know, act accordingly. So it could be they were at a high level. Obviously, we're not them, and we're not having their type of insights in Ruach HaKodesh. But I do think it's like a person who is keenly aware of the world and is thinking and has chachma, sometimes could pick up on things which they may not even be able to prove or define exactly, but decisions have to be made sometimes in a split second. And the more a person is a chacham, the more they'll be equipped to be able to have those decisions. You know, maybe hashkacha, however the Ruach HaKodesh is working, whether it's Hashem gives the knowledge, is it hashkacha, is it just Hashem made in the world that a person who is a chacham could have insights like this, however it is. But it means there's a different type of knowledge which is accessible to a chacham, the more the as per each person's level, than an ordinary person going through the world. You know, and these are like examples of it. And it could be specifically in the Yosef story, because it's a good model of a story where they don't know what's going on. They're totally in the dark about what's truly going on, but yet at the same time, they're able to pick up on it. And that's like, this is a model of a story like that, which is maybe a model for us in situations where we don't know what's going on. Sometimes we do know what's going on, other times we don't know what's going on. But this is like that type of a story. So it could be lend itself to, you know.
They don't have no knowledge.
Exactly.
They have knowledge of
hashgacha. Yes, exactly. Yeah, they have knowledge of hashgacha, psychology, and all. But at the same time, like the big piece of information, yeah, they don't know. Totally in the dark. But yeah, it doesn't mean you don't have anything. Right, exactly. So that's like maybe a unification of all these things, you know? So for example, like, that idea, if you like it, I don't think you could come to that without kind of going through any of each of the particulars. It's like kind of emerging from one, from the other, from the other, from the other, and they kind of fit into a pattern, you know? Now, maybe the first one helped us get insight into the second one, which helped us get into the third. You know, it's like kind of, you build on it, and then you start getting an idea. But if you just look at it without having any insight into any of the particulars, you just think, oh, what's Ruach HaKodesh? Oh, maybe this, maybe this, maybe this. It's like, You're gonna be analyzing it on like a somewhat of a superficial level because you don't understand what's their insight. So they just have some sort of knowledge. Yeah.
You did do a first step where you made a point, which was all I was saying before. But where you made like a point that it's a general, like it's a something. It's some kind of knowledge.
Yeah.
Or awareness. I mean, you made like a very tentative, very loose.
Right.
I really had no idea.
Yeah. Oh, I understand.
I had zero.
Okay.
I feel like by having like a general sense of what kind of thing it might be, and then looking at each one.
Right, okay.
I mean, I wouldn't call that, that's what I said, I wasn't saying a unification.
I understand.
But something,
okay. Yeah, okay, fine.
A general idea to go with, and, you know.
Yeah,
as opposed to like Ruach HaKodesh is where like, it's not full nevuah, this is what I thought when I was growing up.
Right, I understand.
It's not full nevuah, it's like partial nevuah. It's like kind of nevuah, but the person doesn't have like a clear nevuah.
I understand. Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know that we did this 2 weeks ago. The other one.
Right,
so it could be that was, I didn't realize at that time that there were all these other ones, you know? But I don't know if I would have you know, known that coming in either. Now, how would you know that? You just have these five things.
Right.
You know, so that's what we did. We worked on that first one, and then that was kind of what we thought. Maybe that's, you know, but, it, you know, so it comes from, I'm saying my point is it comes from analyzing at least one of them or something. Because otherwise, how do you know that? Or you could just know, well, the Rambam says, you know, you could bring in like a piece of information like that. But
I think there's like a little bit of like a back and forth. You have like a very, very loose possibility about what might be, and then you look and you start to see each one.
Yeah.
Without being committed to a definition.
Yes. Yeah.
But some sense, that's clearly, it's not overt nevuah.
Right.
And it's not, you know.
Yes.
And I found it very helpful because you said it. I was like, oh, okay, that's what I was looking for. I was looking for some general sense of where we're going with
this. Right, I understand. Yeah. Okay, good. Any questions there?
It reminds me of a comment on the date for Mashiach.